Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Three Muses in a Universe. And today we couldn't decide what our topic was going to be, so we decided to do indecision. And I'm here with Tierney Sadler and Sheila Cash, and I'm Mary Thielen. And welcome to our show today. So, where would we like to jump in? I think indecision is probably the biggest topic for everybody, even though they don't know it.
Mm-hmm. And I tend to lump in for blocks and limitations in with that also. I think that they're all coming from the same place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, because I have a hard time making decisions or anything like that. But I certainly have blocks and limitations. So what place do you think they're coming from? Help me. Help me.
Well, I think indecision basically is the fear of being wrong. And it's, to the level you beat yourself up is going to be your level of indecision. Or to the level other people have beaten you up metaphorically for being wrong. And the more regret you have, the more indecisive you're going to get. The more you're going to be. So limitations are kind of funded, blocks and limitations are kind of funded from the same thing. If you have a history of that not being right, whether you've witnessed it or experienced it, you're not going to be able to do it, you know. And it was once said that if you fear it, you've already experienced it. If you don't fear it, you haven't experienced it. So if we experience something that we fear, it's going to block. That's one of many.
Right. I think there probably are a great many root causes of this. And one thing that comes to mind is if you have been conditioned by a parent or a mentor, you know, some family members when you were growing up who were indecisive or who were blocked, that seems to be inherited, that tendency.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's inherited, that's the whole environment versus, you know, sort of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can pick up those kinds of patterns as well.
Yes, that's very true, very true. It's a learned behavior.
You know, and then there's, and it seems, I feel like it always sort of comes down to this old conditioning in many of the topics that we talk about. But I think that there is that sense of unworthiness in many people, and that is ancient conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But if you feel that you're not worthy, you're going to be blocked, or you're going to, you know, feel limited. You know that you can't or you shouldn't move forward. And as you said, if you have guilt or shame, that can keep you from moving forward and being indecisive.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me right now, I feel that I struggle some with the who do you think you are kind of thing, to want that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? That who do you think you are to want to be famous and adored by everyone. And so I struggle with that because on one hand, there's that. The why are you so special? What makes you so special? But on the other hand, I have this thing within me that says anything is possible. I mean, my chances of becoming widely known and adored are just the same as anybody else's. It's not like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like there's anything special about extra special about somebody who actually makes it. Do you see what I'm saying? So I have this big struggle between those two things, and that's that insecurity that you were talking about. That thing, because I have voices in my family and whatever that are kind of the who do you think you are that you want something. You want to be an author or whatever.
And that even gets back to that indecision. Do I deserve it or do I not?
Yeah.
And it's not like an indecision of do I want chicken wings or do I want Thai food for lunch or whatever. It's this indecision of, is this my path or is that my path?
Right.
Yes. And I think what you were speaking to, Tony, also harkens to cultural expectations, because you know, as you're talking about who is worthy and who isn't, you know, not everybody really wants to be particularly, you know, famous,
right,
and adored and so on. So whether you do or whether you,
yeah,
don't has a lot to do with expectations, cultural expectations from within or from without.
Yeah.
And you know, and some ego issues. But I agree, Mary, I think that a deeper cause of all this is that everybody tends to want to know what their purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big question, you know, what is my purpose? And most people tend to be very confused throughout life, even in the older years. What was my purpose? What is? What, you know, what will be? What was? And if we don't have clarity about that, we can be very indecisive about which way to go, because we don't want to waste time. We don't want to make mistakes. We want to find that place. But is it really about finding our purpose?
Yeah, and I that's a very good point. I think that we try to bring our everyday 3D reality of where you have to earn things in order to attain them, meaning you have to, back to the old biblical thing that we're born sinners and we have to attain approval in some way. We bring that into our spiritual life. Yeah, and that in order for me to be fulfilled spiritually, I have to have a purpose. That's a very earthbound type of a concept. That's why it rarely works for people. But it's something I call the V syndrome. If you picture the letter V, I'm going to go and leave my marriage because I need to be happy, but I don't have the finances. So you go back, okay, I'll stay here because of the finance. Well, I'm not happy. And so it just goes up one side, down and up and down and up, and you never really take a path. And I think that...
And that is not your purpose. That anybody listening, it's not your purpose to be in that V forever.
That's one thing we know.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know, even that, I think what we learn when we're in the V,
yeah,
I think our purpose really is to find that we don't have to have a purpose, that just existence is enough, the state of grace. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of depth, but I know moments when I'm just in a complete state of now, and exploring other realms of consciousness, I'm not thinking. And I feel that if we can get to the place where we're in the experiencing mind rather than the measuring mind, that is really the purpose. How we define it is unique.
Yeah, I think that's key, because I think that if I were more self-referenced, I would probably be less blocked than me spending time listening to the voices outside of me or that may be echoing something within me, I guess, that is not, you know. But another thing that occurred to me when you were talking was, and I've always wondered this myself about my own hesitation to move forward at times, is it because we think we only have one chance at the purpose thing? So if we fail, then that means that we're here for nothing. And so the implications of failing and not making it are enough to keep us from ever trying, because what if there really is no meaning in life? What if there really is no purpose? Or what if I'm just not suited to carry out my purpose, which sounds silly, but I think there's a fear.
You know, it's so interesting that you bring that up. I was just having a conversation with my daughter who's beginning to have some consciousness shifting. She had just recently, within the last couple of years, got her grad degree from Harvard, and she's now wanting to bake. So we just had a conversation. In fact, today's her birthday.
Oh,
her 28th birthday, and 28 is a big sort of the whole Saturn return.
She should bake.
But one of the things that I was saying to her was, when I was in college, it really was more important to be able to choose a path that you could stick with, because the culture in that at that time was, it was the old boys network. You know, white men, as I described it, you know, because they tend to be the privileged ones in society, or at least used to be traditionally, for many decades in this country. And even they were having to work for years, sometimes decades, just to get to a managerial position in the corporate and work environment. That was long before younger people then were able to just take the reins, do their own thing, create their own businesses. The internet changed everything, because now young people didn't have to put in all of those years. So we have this conditioning that, like you say, it, especially at the, you know, some of the, you know, middle age and on, perhaps not as much the young people, because they, you know, they've had a fully different environment. But we have that conditioning that, oh my gosh, what if I put in all of these years and I'm not able to change at that point? I built my resume this way in this direction, and now I'll never be able to go into another field. And things are changing now,
though.
So it's not the way that, certainly it used to be.
Well, there's an example here locally, just so that you know, for your daughter, have her look him up. The guy that owns Cake Love, which has a number of locations around here, Ivy League educated lawyer, in his 20s, quit lawyering, I guess, and opened up these bakeries, because that was what his passion was.
Well, even for me, I was an IT director for a pretty large company. For someone to attain that is pretty difficult, let alone someone with no college degree. And everything was done just learning. I never took one class for anything. I just taught myself networking. I taught myself software, programming, everything. And I did that and worked my way up after many years of really hard work to a pretty high-level position. And nobody else in the company that didn't have a degree in was where I was. And I was in charge of a lot of technical decisions. And I left it to do this. And so the income was a huge drop to do our show, which is an all-volunteer thing, and to do what I do, you know, leaving health insurance and everything. And I feel like when you know what's right for you, when you're not caught up in that society belief or your family belief about what you should be doing and what you want to do, when you're really clear about that, it's like there really isn't any question.
I still think that you can be clear about it and have questions, because there's a part of me that is pretty clear that I need to be an author and go in this direction, but I'm still somehow
indecisive.
I guess indecisive is the word. I mean, I guess that's not the word that I would choose, but blocked and wallowing in my limitations.
To me, there's a belief that says you can't do that. There's some belief, either it can be way over there, like feeling that you won't be supported if you go there, questioning self, or whatever it is that you find.
I have a lot of fears around it. I know that much.
Yeah.
Well, let's put you in the hot seat.
Okay. No, I'm happy to be in the hot seat.
Because let's take it deeper then. What do you feel are your block limitations in decision?
Well, I can say that some of my fears, I think that definitely there's probably a fear of failure in there. I think that I'm afraid of being exposed on a large level, because I'm a very, I wouldn't say private person, but I'm a very, I keep to myself kind of person. There's not a whole lot of people in and out of my life. So going into, say, a bookstore or something like that, or giving a lecture on a TED stage, this is one of the things that I want to do, is give a TED lecture.
Okay, pretend like you're doing it right
now. I can do that.
What would be your anxious? Would you be anxious, number one? And what is...
I'd be anxious, but I'm okay. This is an odd dichotomy with me, is that I'm really good on the stage. I love to be the center of attention, but I don't like to be exposed exposed in that way.
You know, but I know you're writing, and you do expose yourself.
Oh, I expose myself
a bit
when
you're writing
a lot. Yeah.
So you already do it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. You're right about that.
So then, and you do it publicly.
Yeah.
So then there's something else, but so it's not that, because you have already done that.
I did, well, but see, on the small level that I do it now, let's just say I have a couple hundred readers or something like that, on the small level that I do it now, I'm getting zero judgment. As I get larger, of course, I'm going to be up for judgment. I'm going to be called fake. I'm gonna blow up at a Bed Bath & Beyond clerk one day, and it'll be on YouTube kind of thing.
I'm not human. It really does get to that point. Now, look, here's the thing, because having done the show for 16 years, I read on Internet things. I saw those people from telepathic TV, and they were eating with chopsticks and people come up, they take pictures and they post them and stuff like that. Well, I was at the Grand Canyon and somebody came over that watches the show. Our show airs all over the country.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And so everywhere, I have gone places, you know, all over the place, and then you see, oh, I saw that.
Oh, I mean, we've been with you before where people have stopped their car or whatever and said.
But I tell you, what you're talking about is something I feel held me back.
You know, I guess I probably have a couple of skeletons or stuff like that, but there are things that I'm fine with. You know, my whole sort of platform is that you can be spiritual and wise and still be like infinitely fucked up.
Microchips and cameras everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
To me, if I'm comfortable with my life and they're going to see me go down and put the mail in the mailbox and make a piece of toast, it's like more power to you if that's entertaining. And I think it gets down to that self-love thing, because you can see that it's ultimately not even a logical thing, because you are a very transparent type person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you know, whatever. And one thing that we've said on the show for many years is, if someone tells you they're perfect, don't believe them, because it's impossible. I don't care if you're Oprah or Wayne Dyer. You can hear stories about, oh, they blew up over here. I have no expectations.
I never hear it about Oprah, but you know what happens.
Or the expectations we have on ourselves.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, and it feels to me like your expectations of yourself are greater than what anybody would have. You know, of you, or unless you're worried about, you know, paparazzi.
What it really is, I think, and it's possible, because I see how this is becoming less and less as I age, is caring about what other people think. As long as I care about what other people think, it's going to keep me blocked from that kind of thing, or it's going to keep me afraid. And I just need to get to the point, and I'm getting there. It's getting more.
I tell
and more.
You know, that external validation.
Exactly.
If we can stop that, and then ultimately, if we can stop our internal validation, that's the one
I think that we have to stop that before we can stop the external thing. I think that when you start believing
one quick thing, just because I've done a lot of research and I have a lot of body of work behind this, that when we first approach this, what people tend to do is say, I'm looking for these people's approval. Let me find my own. I know I'm perfect. The universe loves me. And you get to that point where you finally find a reference point that is not other people. But when it's the core self, when you get down to your inner beliefs, to say, I don't have to have any reflection of me to know I'm here. That's when true ascension, or whatever we want to call it, happens. I'm not saying there's any human being alive that has done that, because I think we're here to observe ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think you've hit the nail right on the head with that. And honestly, I would say I threw myself into the deep end of the pool, because I used to care way a lot. You were talking about environment earlier.
Yeah.
My father, my whole culture that I grew up in is you care what the neighbors think. If they want this, you give it to them. And so you really do get desensitized. After a while, it's like,
yeah,
you don't even know
That analogy is great of throwing yourself into the deep end of the pool, because you do that without thinking. So you went ahead and made all the decisions to be on TV without all the years of buildup of fear of being like,
yeah, I have no idea.
Exactly. So if you don't think about it, it's easy to do. And I've made some huge changes in my life without putting a whole lot of thought into it.
But
more
writing is
a
thing for me, too, that I have a huge block. And I think all three of us would say that, because writing is more intimate. I can stand up in front of 400 people and give messages, or I can be on live TV. But when it comes to reading my poetry to somebody,
yeah,
my voice shakes. I can't even get it out.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think writing is more intimate
than
a lot of things.
And it does come from a different place. Because when you're writing, you're not writing up on a public board the way you're speaking. You know, it may become public later, but it's very public in the moment.
Mm.
But, you know, if we are so concerned about others judging us, we have to remember that you can only judge someone about anything that you're judging yourself about. So if we are not receiving judgment, in other words, if we're deflecting it, if it's not, you know, if it's not affecting us in any way, then we give people permission to not judge themselves either.
Yes, because we're only judging in others what we judge in ourselves. So whatever someone judges you for, it's really about them.
We're not giving them permission to not judge themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we're not.
And we're validating.
You know, we're not accepting ourselves. We're not accepting them. We're not allowing them to accept themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be models.
Yeah, and you know, I was going to say my blog at ParentingSadler.com is sort of has been an exercise for me in trying to overcome that thing, because there are some times that it's really hard for me to push publish, because what I'm putting out is something that's raw, and time after time after time I am not judged for it. And people come in and they say, I feel the same way too, or thank you for saying that, or thank you for... And for every person that says that, I think that there are others who don't even have the courage to say thank you for saying what was on my mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And remember how closeted and clandestine society used to be. And we couldn't... How can you process through pathologies when you're not talking about them, when everybody... I mean, I can remember, you know, back in the 60s, people couldn't say the word cancer. You know,
if the neighbor had cancer,
you were supposed to, you know,
they touched
the children and don't say that word. You know, how can we process through collectively if we're not sharing?
Yeah.
Denial. Wow.
Exactly. And that's another thing that drives me too, because I think to myself, if I can have the courage to say these things that other people can't talk about. I mean, I've even made just casual posts on my page about what a drag menopause is, and women swoop in and they're like, oh my God, you're experiencing that too. You pee a little when you cough or sneeze or whatever. Oh my God, I'm not a weirdo. You know what I mean? But there are people are hungry for that kind of validation that the things that nobody else talks about that are going on inside of their head are things that are actually going on inside of everybody's head, or most people's head.
Including that validation, or that fear of, like, the people that get on the internet and the comments section and really tear people up, they're the ones that are most afraid of being torn up, and they're angry that that person has the gall to go out there and do
yes.
it anyway.
Yes.
And so it's like they're really, they're angry at themselves, and when you, you know, understand that, it's like it kind of
yeah.
cancels it out. Like the reviews we were reading for a restaurant, you can see that they've got their own issues, so you kind of cancel that one.
Right, right. But there's an intellectual understanding of that and an emotional understanding of that, and it's the emotional understanding, I think, that holds you back.
Mm-hmm.
Because intellectually, we all know that the people who judge us are really
I went through a number of years, because when we started doing this, it was in 99, when things were not open to this kind of thought, and we were talking about guides, teachers, after, you know, post-death experiences and all kinds of things. And people would call in and leave messages about, you know, criticizing my looks or something really personal. And it was terrible. And I was so sensitive at the time. I remember just crying and people saying, well, that doesn't matter. You know, that's ridiculous. They're just mean or something. But it hurts. But after a while, it's like we fear, we protect these feelings, and we do all this stuff, like not being on TED Talks or whatever, to
yeah.
protect these feelings, whereas if you just let them out and they get stepped on a few times, you realize, hey, I'm going to pull this back in, and that's your foot over there. And it's not like you have to go by trial by fire. But,
right.
But, and then after that, guess what happens? People just stop criticizing.
Yeah, once I got completely, I don't care. I honestly, genuinely didn't care. I just don't get it anymore. And see, and I think that that's probably why I don't get criticism and I only get sort of praise on my blog. And there are a couple times people will say something, but they're always very nice and respectful about it or whatever, is because I have somehow found a way to just detach myself.
Are we saying, or let me rephrase that, make a statement about what it takes to be decisive and free-flowing and unblocked.
Promising yourself you will never, ever withhold love from yourself for any decision you make, and I think that it frees up everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say confidence and, you know, be self-referenced. Don't listen to what other people will tear down your dreams because of their own fears.
Mm,
and
very good.
Nothing to do with you.
And to be as honest with yourself as you can be, not to lie to yourself, to get to your own true north, so that you know who you are and where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is so important. That is very good. Wow.
So that was that.
Another half hour, Blue Bias. Can we psychoanalyze you next month again?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you
for that, by the way. Again, this is bringing up your point. You allow this stuff and, you know, you allow yourself
yeah.
to come out. And so
I just need to recognize that just as I do it easily on my blog, it's the same thing if I'm in front of
a stadium
with over to my side.
Well, next time we're going to be filming this.
Yes,
and then we're going to bring a clown in and we're just going to give her some shock therapy. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about ears and toes. Did you say
ears and toes? And how weird-looking they can be when you really look at them, audience. Just really noticing people's ears.
Yes, and speaking of noticing, we have a number of shows now in the archives. So you can go to Blog Talk Radio and listen to them. And I believe you can find us on iTunes as well. So
nice.
Check it out. We usually do.
I didn't even know that.
And we're doing podcasts for our music.
Yeah.
These are podcasts, aren't they?
I believe they go out to podcasting.
Yeah.
And if they don't, I will put them out as podcasting.
I don't even know what a podcast is, and I'm a podcaster.
You're a podcaster. Okay. Well, it was fun. And so I guess we'll all say goodbye. We're down to our last.
We will be back next month.
Yes. Goodbye. Okay. We'll see you next time.